Radio.
Man and Woman in Love. An interview with Byron and Francine Parola in the lead up to the World Congress of Families in Sydney. Well, thank you very much, Byron and Francine, for joining me today.
My pleasure.
Absolute delight, Luke.
Thank you. Now, at the upcoming World Congress of Families, which will be happening in May of this year, you will be doing a couple of talks, both of you, but one of them in particular is one called Man and Woman in Love, Unique for a Reason. To me, that sounds a little bit politically incorrect today to say that man and woman in love is unique for a reason. Can you go to describe what exactly you mean by man and woman in love?
I'll let you start, Byron.
Okay. Look, it's interesting how politicized marriage has become. And I guess from our perspective, we're talking about a relationship that has been in practice for millennium, and there's no particular political aspect or view around this title and topic. The vast majority of people who live, in a love relationship, and in our culture today, still all the people who live in a married relationship, although that seems to be under challenge in parts of the world, are a man and a woman. And so our interest area has always been, how do you practically, as a man and a woman, with all the differences that brings, live in a rich and vibrant, intimate, lifelong relationship that's marked of joy, full of joy and happiness? And I think the area of interest for our work, which is over 20 years working with married couples, centers around the observation that while our differences, our gender differences as men and women, and there are many of them, are often a source of confusion and sometimes even tension in relationships, when you understand them, they're actually a fundamental source of richness that actually helps the success of the relationship and draws out the unique charisms that masculinity and femininity have, particularly in the relationship to raising children, and the way that not just we relate as husband and wife, but as importantly, how we relate as mother and father to both boys and to girls that we're raising. So I think we don't have any particular political interest in this topic, particularly not in this talk. We're just going to the heart of what it means to be man and woman in love, and how you then draw on the riches and the richness of gender difference to make that relationship more successful, more vibrant, and more joy-filled. And also, on the counter of that, how do you avoid the pitfalls when you have misunderstanding around those differences?
If I could add to that, Luke, one of the things that really strikes me is that, say, 50 years ago, marriage was a lot less complicated for people. There were clearly defined roles for husbands and wives, mothers and fathers and so on. And it tended to be, along the lines of the wife centering her life and her contribution around the home, and the husband centering his contribution around the provision for the family and so on. And I think in that context, as it was then, it made it really easy for husband and wife to appreciate the contribution of the other and to rest sort of a little more comfortably in their interdependence on each other. Now, I'm not suggesting we need to go back to that. I'm not sort of harping on about the good old days, because we all know that there were some problems with that kind of setup as well, and it didn't really work for a lot of people, that it failed in some situations. And the reality is that we live in quite a different world now. Women are very much providing as well. Men are becoming much more engaged and active in also the life of the family at home. And so we've got a kind of, a sharing of the gender roles in marriage. But it presents a challenge for modern couples, because it's not obvious to us straight away how husbands and wives can bring complementary gifts into the relationship like it was back then. We now have to work a little bit harder to uncover, I guess, even more fundamental personal qualities and characteristics, and in order to tap into that great bonding capacity of that interdependence that those sort of complementary relationships bring. Does that kind of make sense to where we're sort of going with this? It's really about trying to understand the unique feminine and the unique masculine contribution to relationship, so that we can work with those differences to build, to bond us together, rather than getting stuck in a kind of a tug of war over who's doing more or who's not contributing or who's not pulling their weight, which is what many couples find themselves drifting into these days in marriage. They get sort of get stuck in that rut of, I'm doing more than you're doing. And if you're both competing on the same kind of tasks all the time, well, then, you know, you're constantly comparing yourself to the other. And when you approach gender differences with a mindset of appreciating the unique and the complementarity of the two, you're less likely to drift into that mentality.
Yeah, you've talked about complementarity a lot with regards to the roles of men and women in marriage. Can you give me an example of those roles and how they do complement each other? Because I think it's something that I know I personally didn't really learn from high school or anything like that. It was kind of men and women are just different because of our very obvious biological makeup. Can you explain those role differences and the complementarity between them?
Yeah, definitely. Look, one of the main areas I think is in the way that we connect and bond with each other. So we could call it connection strategies, if you like. And pretty much there's two basic ones. There's ones that uses verbal language and there's another that uses body language or physical language. And when you break down men and women, you tend to find that women have a predominant preference for verbal language, for that intimate verbal conversation. That tends to be the way that we women connect with other people. And for men, there's more of a body language or a physical kind of strategy that they use to establish connection and intimacy in their relationship. So that obviously includes very explicitly sexual language, but it's also expressed even more broadly in things like acts of service, using their bodies to protect and to provide and you know, serve in the home and in the marriage. And when you kind of start to appreciate that there's a sort of a difference there, and it's not that one is better than the other or that we need to, you know, only do one and not the other. It's really, we like to sort of use the analogy of left and right-handedness. You know, I'm right-handed, so my right hand is more dexterous. I rely very heavily on it to write and so on and do lots of many more tasks with my right hand. But I still need my left hand. I need my left hand and my right hand to carry heavy objects. I need both hands to tie a shoelace. So it's not that my left hand is redundant or unnecessary. It's just that I have a bias and a preference towards using my right hand. Similarly, somebody who's left-handed would be the same. And so appreciating these broad spectrum of the different ways that men and women connect can help husbands and wives to appreciate the, you know, unique contribution and so that they can perhaps then learn to love more effectively by entering into the other's space. So, for example, one of the things that we work with couples a lot is they can get very hurt and wounded by misunderstanding the efforts of connection of the other person. So the wives can feel very rejected and abandoned because the husband doesn't sort of want to listen to her, for example. And that's often the complaint we hear from women is that he never listens. You know, I've got better relationships with my girlfriends. We can talk about anything, but, you know, my husband just never seems to want to talk is the kind of complaints that women often make. You know, he'll often complain that, well, that's all she ever wants to do is talk. You know, there's you know, only if it's sex never happens except when it's on her terms, and he'll often articulate complaints around sort of feeling like he's being sexually controlled and so on and rejected. And they're
What happens, Luke, is that she doesn't recognise, because of her innate, if you like, right-handedness, her innate desire and intuition to connect verbally, she doesn't recognise, to use an example, that him working late at the office or tidying up the backyard is actually his way of doing something to contribute to the relationship and connect to her. He's physically doing something that he sees as a gift to the family and to the provision and the care of the family, but she just sees it as him off doing something. And likewise, when he's sitting there trying to connect with his spouse, you know, the best way he knows how, by looking for a way to, you know, give her a hug, hold her hand or whatever it might be, to reach out to her physically, which is his native language, and that she wants to start talking about the day and what happened or something like that, he hears it as just a conversation, not her desire to open her inner life to him. So there's a misunderstanding in that. So if you don't understand each other's languages, there's a misunderstanding of the communication. On the counter, if you understand what's going on, then the complementarity really comes to play. because the man gets drawn in to an emotional life, to sharing his emotional life, which he doesn't necessarily readily look to do. So he actually grows himself by coming more inward looking. And his wife likewise gets drawn more into a relationship that has a physical expression that she might not otherwise have explored if left to her own devices. So our complementarity, if misunderstood, sort of pushes us into corners where we feel alone and misunderstood. But when we get what the other person is doing, when we learn the other person's love language, when we understand what they're trying to say, even though it's not our innate language, it's not our native tongue, it takes us personally on a journey that's actually enriching for us as an individual. But more importantly, it actually opens up the levels of intimacy between us as a couple.
Yeah. So really what you've talked about there, you've kind of talked about, on one hand, things like, say, things have really changed in the last 50 to 60 years with regards to employment or parental responsibilities or responsibilities around the home. But you've also talked about these kind of preceding qualities, the complementary qualities. How do you separate the two? Because often when conversations like this happen, it can sometimes get muddled up within the language that if you suggest that, for example, as you suggested, that men are much more physically oriented and women are much more verbally oriented, it can quickly descend into, oh, are you saying that women should be barefoot and pregnant and women shouldn't be allowed to go and work and men aren't allowed to work around the house and look after the kids? How do you really separate those things, the things that are timeless about the roles and the things that are a little bit more malleable?
So I think the answer to that one is that you've got to actually stop talking about roles and start with what it means to be in love and what it means to be in intimate conversation. And when you're in an intimate relationship, if you think about it, an intimate relationship is where there's no barriers. In other words, the surfaces are completely exposed. And so both the surfaces of inner life, the psychological and emotional inner life, and the physical expression of intimacy, which in marriage has got a very, you know, specific dimension that doesn't exist in any other relationship. It's different with my kids, it's different with my parents, it's different with my friends down the street. It's a very physical relationship. Those two surfaces become completely exposed and intertwined. Once you understand that, then the issue of roles is just trivial. It's admin. And you just sort that out as you want to as a couple. So, you know, she might work, he might work. It doesn't really matter. What it matters is our unity. Our unity is based on our complementarity. The roles are just things we do. And I've got to say, Francine and I, you know, jump up and down, in and out of these different roles. Are different, not just, you know, compared to other couples, we have a certain style, but it moves over time as the circumstances of our life changes. Now, who's parenting more at the moment? Well, which child are you talking about and what's the issue? I mean, we remember talking to a couple of friends of ours who had a large family, and somebody asked the wife one day, which child do you love the most? Because you can't possibly love them all equally. And she said, it was such a wise answer. She said, the one that needs it the most at that time. And I think that comes with the roles are just simply now an expression. So rather than sort of go, and this is the problem the culture gets into. The culture gets into this idea that equality means that we're all the same. We're not all the same. Every man is different from every other man. Every woman is different from every other woman. And every man and every woman have fundamental differences, right? So when we talk about equality, we should be talking about, you know, the right that every individual has to live to a life of full expression. We're not talking about everybody doing the same thing. So really the roles that you were referring to are really about how we specialize as husband and wife in different areas of family life. And those can be worked out best when you have a really strong relationship that's built on both on your complementary styles. And now it's just an admin question about who's better equipped to earn money this year, next year, or whatever, who gets more excited about doing something, who's best to relate to the kids at this stage. And some of those things will naturally probably fall men more on average to men than women because we have different psyches. But it doesn't dictate a role, and it certainly doesn't force people into boxes or corners.
Did you have anything to add to that, Francine?
I had a couple of things to add as he was on the fly, and he just covered them off so beautifully, so I'm going to rest in peace at the moment.
That's complementarity in action right there. So finally, just to give yourselves a plug, you'll be doing a couple of talks at the World Congress of Families. Can you give us a little bit of an idea of the areas that you'll be covering there?
Well, we have a keynote address on the Saturday morning, which we will be exploring this topic in more detail and with a little bit more structure and organisation. And then a little bit later in the day, we also have a workshop we're sharing with another speaker. I can't think of his name at the moment, but we were looking at that at a much more practical application of this kind of idea called smart loving, which is really getting down to very just practical strategies and frameworks that couples can and individuals can take home and start applying, not just to their marriage relationship, but to their all the relationships in their lives with their children and friends and work colleagues. And that's just a really sort of practical focus on that workshop.
Okay, and also you mentioned a little bit within when you were talking about your work that you both do. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Look, our organisation, the Marriage Resource Centre, is a part of a Catholic lay movement that works in a number of areas. Our particular area is in the marriage area, and what we really focus on doing is actually providing very practical resources, courses, books, written materials, video materials that basically help people understand marriage and sexuality, particularly within the Catholic context. If you like, we put JP2's Theology of the Body into practice. And our work is basically not from a theoretical basis, although, of course, we understand the theology and the psychology of marriage, but rather from the practical basis. And if you like, the way we tend to think about this a bit is that we have a real skills gap that's emerged now in our church and in our culture. We have an incredible intellectual richness around relationships, both psychologically and also from a spiritual, theological perspective. But we have a very poor understanding of how to practically put that into lived experience. And that's where we come into it. And our courses and programs are basically about, you know, making the connection between spirituality and sexuality in a very practical way as couples, you know, whether they are dating, engaged or married, live their lives and really discover God through that process. So it's not just about how to live a happy married life and avoid divorce. It's really about how do we come to know God through this vocation of marriage that most adults actually live most of their adult life in.
And if I could just add to that, Luke, you know, a lot of people kind of look at the work that we do and think, oh, they're just the marriage people, they're just helping couples to get along better. But it's actually, there's a much deeper and more significant mission, if you like, or vision to what we're doing there. If we understand God as love, then if we can help couples particularly encounter love more profoundly in their marriage relationships, they will be coming face to face with God. And it's sort of like tilling the soil a little bit so that there's a greater receptivity to then have the conversations, the more direct conversations with them about exploring their spirituality as a couple. And really, in some ways, it's been we're very slow off the mark as a church, like we're into the second, third millennium. And we see ourselves as being very much a part of a movement that's trying to explore and articulate what are the specific spiritual exercises for married couples. You know, we have, for example, very well-developed spiritualities from some of the religious orders, Jesuits and Carmelites and Benedictines and so on, beautiful traditions that have really dived in deep to try and understand the spiritual life. We're only really just starting that journey and that conversation in the context of marriage as a vocation. And for us, that's a very exciting agenda that we're exploring through the very practical and lived experience of, you know, just struggling with the modern day marriage and trying to love each other better and discover God through that love.
Mm-hmm. Definitely sounds like really important and, of course, much needed work today. Byron and Francine, thank you very much for joining me and thank you very much for your insight. I'll be praying for your work and, yeah, I hope that everything goes well for the conference.
Thank you very much, Luke.
That was Byron and Francine Parola with Man and Woman in Love. The 7th World Congress of Families will be taking place from the 15th till the 18th of May in Sydney. And for more interviews, talks and shows, visit cradio.org.au.